Hi, and welcome to the International Writers Network. And as usual, we have always someone so special. And this time around, we have a wonderful poet who has been in and out of poetry. She's a poet, a creative writer. She runs workshops, she's a facilitator, runs workshop, teaches, and even cross-country. And she's also doing her dissertation for a doctorate. She's finished her doctorate.
I've actually withdrawn from that.
Okay.
But hey, I'm much more engaged with facilitation now because I'm not involved in the research so much.
Okay, right. So there you are then. So anyway, Fiona, you are welcome. We know you have so much to share with us on this platform.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute honour to be here again, Mary.
Yes.
It's such a lovely thing. And this time around, I'm actually in the studio. Last time it was from my bedroom, I was broadcasting with you.
Thank you so much for being here, Fiona. It's good to see you in person too. Now, Fiona, first of all, I want to congratulate you on the launch of your book called...
Love in the Original Language.
Okay,
yeah.
Love in the Original Language. And so Love in the Original Language, I know you did just earlier on this month, you had a wonderful launch and in the book upstairs, and I was privileged to be there. It was absolutely fascinating. So without further ado, how come this particular book? Because you've been writing books, so you've been writing poetry. You are a leader in this. But why this particular book? Why was this one so precious?
So I suppose my first book came out in 2019, at the end of 2019, just before all the trouble started. So I launched that in December 2019, and this book had been due out quite soon after that, but we decided to postpone for a little while because of COVID, but also because at that time I was still very much engaged with research and I didn't really have time to edit and organize the manuscript and get it all together. So Salmon Poetry were very kind and they agreed to give me an extra bit of time. And so finally we decided that if I could have the manuscript ready, that we'd have it out in June this year. So we had a launch in Ennis-Dyman in June and a launch up in Dublin in July. So it's been launches everywhere ever since. So it's great fun. Yeah, it's wonderful to have it out.
Thank you for sharing that. Now, it says you explore the limits and the just the perception of language, cross-border, different aspects of language. And why is language so important to you, cross-border?
I suppose I'm... a poet, so language is my medium.
Yes.
As for an artist, you have colour and, you know. So for me, language is all I have really to work with. And for me, language is also what's used to make laws. And laws are what we use to govern countries and to create nation states and the idea of countries which should have borders. And how do we cross those borders and how do we breach the borders which are created legally? And so language allows us to create these problems, but also I think the solution to some of the issues that we have with, borders and migration, some of those solutions are also to be found in language. So for me, I suppose in many ways as a poet, I can't legislate, but what I can do is I can start to impact on the language, which hopefully will filter in some way into legislation, or at least the way people who vote for the legislators start thinking. And one of the ways of doing that is to introduce new words into a language. So for instance, by embracing all of the languages in my head, by encouraging the people that I work with and whose work I facilitate, by encouraging them to speak with all of the languages in their head, to use all the words in their head and not to feel obliged to only use words from a particular language. So I would be very much of the school of thought that believes that plurilingual poetry has a very important part to play in our society today. That is poetry which blends languages rather than sticking rigidly to one language and saying, oh no, we can't have foreign words in this language or whatever.
So you're breaking the mood. That's it, isn't it? You're breaking the mood because you're going to. That means we can then invite the slangs in different countries to enter into poetry, the words that they use in their day-to-day life to actually be part of poetry, and it will still be our poetry. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it doesn't
yeah.
have to be completely yeah. in the English language.
No.
But then even within the English language, if you had working class poets, they may have different kind of slangs and
yeah.
different kind of terminology.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I'm getting from you.
Yeah, so, yeah. And also there are so many families who might speak English out on the street, but at home they might speak another language or a number of other languages. So that the children growing up in those homes and having all of those languages in their heads when they sit down and they write in school and they're told, no, this is English class, you have to write in English. I would be very much of the school of thought that would say, actually, no. If the word comes to you in another language, use the word in the language it comes to you. Don't feel obliged to translate that word, to you know, keep that word as it is and let the reader figure out what the word means.
Right. Do you know, I was going to say to you, you know, Pidgin English is spoken a lot, especially Africans and other people from new communities, and they tend to use Pidgin English. But when you want to write poetry, you tend to say, no, I can't do that. It doesn't make sense. So, but you said your school of thought is that include those, because that's the reality
oh, yeah.
of your life.
Yeah, but it's not just me. I mean, there's a lot of poets who are writing very much in what I suppose some people call the vernacular, the spoken language, the language that people actually speak, rather than, you know, some formal language, some notion of what the language should be. And there are many, I mean, many Black British poets are writing in, you know, with Caribbean roots, so West African. So, you know, they would be very much using language that they would have grown up, you know. So for those poets, for instance, you people like Roger Robinson, and some of his work would incorporate language that he would have been used to from when he lived with his grandmother after he moved back to Jamaica growing up, you know. So it's really interesting to hear that kind of work. So I think if you rummage round, you'll find people like Benjamin Zephaniah,
yeah.
Roger Robinson. You know, there's a lot of wonderful poets out there, you know, playing between languages. David Morley uses Romani words in his work, and that's also very, very interesting. So yeah, lots of wonderful people. And Rain Gagan, who launched her book at the same time as me with Salmon Poetry, O Pukering Kosh, which means the talking stick. So she writes between Romani and English. So she uses a lot of Romani words as well that she would have learned growing up from her grandparents. And she uses those words in her poetry too. So mm-hmm. it's wonderful. And it's great to read language like that. You learn so much.
And of course, that's... let's have your first poem, which is, to me, I just love the natural history.
Okay, natural history. Natural history. The dead whale bones hang preserved in the museum. I look up to see their length and breadth. I long to touch the smoothness, feel the still warmth, but cannot reach. Only my voice carries up and up, my song goes, the melody wrapping itself around the skeleton until fully fleshed, the massive mammal flails mid-air, longing for her native element. The struggle to survive fills the gallery with broken glass, stuffed animals strewn about, dismembered, bloodless, memories of murder. Hammer now, suspended in a hammock, by so many straining seagulls, winging towards the Grand Canal, the whale is gently lowered, hitting the water happily, submerging herself, rising again to navigate the locks, reach River Liffey, then open sea, and learn to sing again, deep and echoing.
Gosh, are you an environmentalist as well?
Like everybody, I live in the world and I want to live in a safe place where my child can grow up and have children and they can go on and everybody can have a safe life. And, you know, I'm conscious of the climate catastrophe that we're living through at the moment. And I'm hoping that the powers that be will take action and do the right thing for the sake of everyone on the planet.
I think it's right. Thank you. I think it's right to say that, Fiona, you're kind of a political activist in your poetry, in terms of the things you touch and the things you, which is going to bring us to the next one, the things that you kind of compile into this, into other books and other things I've heard on the YouTube that you're doing. You tend to be, I mean, you won't call yourself a politician, I'm sure you're a poet, but somehow you engage people to think. And I'll say, without a further ado, if we just take on that, the Stranded at Sea.
Okay.
Please. Then we'll try and, you know, just talk about
it. Yeah, sure. So Stranded at Sea, I just have to be honest here and say that that actual line, so many of the lines here, we are alone. So this line, we are alone, was actually a quote from an art, from I found it in an article. So basically, it was a boat which the people traffickers, or the pilot of the boat, had deserted the ship, and the boat was full of migrants. And some woman got her hand on the radio, and she was trying to get a message across and ask people to rescue them, because she was saying, "We are alone." So I think the rest of it is clear from the poem. Stranded at sea, we are alone. I radio from the ship. We've no one to help us. We have packed clothes, paid gunmen and fled. We are alone. We are far from home. Crossing border and border, we've no one to help us. Gave our savings at the port. Everything precious is gone. We are alone. We hope this boat road leads to safe land. We've no one to help us. The law is silent, this far out to sea. We are alone. We've no one to help us.
That is so touching, because the politician will have a belief. These are illegal migrants. Obviously, you know, the people that they've paid the money to are touts and they shouldn't be paid. But from the poetry that I... from even the sensitivity that you read it just now, you can see these vulnerable people who are just really looking for a place of refuge. And I think, without having to say much, if I was having a placard, I would probably put that poetry there, read this and see the heart of the people. How do you get into the heart of those people without actually, you know, obviously that's not your experience. You'd be what we call, you know... You're
privileged white woman.
I don't want to say it. You said it, so I didn't say it. I'm free. I'm guilty.
No,
so,
that's okay.
But you know what I'm saying? That, you know, but you actually got into the heart, because it's like, yeah, this is what they're saying. We are alone and we've paid. We've given all our savings to this. And we're trying to raise you in. But you put it, I think that's why I want to come to your workshop. You put it, the way your words use, kind of skip the page and just entered into the heart. It's like, this is actually what's going on with people that are coming.
Yeah.
They don't, maybe they don't need Rwanda, as the British is saying, but they need to know these people, they're humans and they are looking for something.
Yeah.
And these other people have trapped them into this thing and they're stranded in the sea.
Yeah. Yeah, and much of this is environmental as well, because many people are fleeing from environmental disaster, you know, or overfishing on the west coast of Africa, you know, whatever it is. A lot of these, a lot of migrants are actually fleeing, not just economic disaster, but they're actually the political. There's political issues as well, but there's also economic issues and there's also environmental issues. So it's not a simple problem.
So is it deliberate then, when you write poems like this, that you're conveying something at the same time? It's actually quite enjoyable to read, but it kind of pulls the heartstring that, hey, we've got to do something about this. Is that your intention, or is it just coming?
Well, I would like to think that at least every poem I write lands with at least one person, and that somebody thinks something. There's a thing called affective learning. So I can teach somebody, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. And so they have learnt something objective. You know, they can go home and they can say, OK, I learnt this. But there's another type of learning, which is affective, which means that you start to think in a slightly different way. And bringing about affective learning in another person, you don't really bring it about. People make the decision to change the way they think themselves. But sometimes I think, as a poet, maybe you have an opportunity to present people with some information in such a way that maybe they'll think twice about something, and maybe it'll help them to start seeing things in a slightly different way. And I would hope that sometimes something I write can change something in somebody's mind in some way. But I think ultimately people are in charge of their own brains. And hopefully. But that phrase that I took, "We are stranded at sea," that wasn't even my phrase, you know. So in a way, I was just taking that and just finding out what was behind that, you know, exploring it in my own head with the bits of information I had, trying to find out. And I'm sure that incredibly brave woman, had she the opportunity to write the poem, would have written a much better, much more powerful poem.
Right, you're very humble. You're very humble there. Fiona, before we go on to your other two poems, which, you know, people need to get this book, Love in the Original Language, I am privileged. I have a signed copy from Fiona herself, and I treasure it dearly. Now, you are also a facilitator, and you do a lot of workshops. Can you tell us a little bit about your workshop that
you're
still doing?
So I do different kinds of workshops, and usually workshops are gauged for different groups. So when I was studying for a PhD, I stopped doing workshops, and I actually found it really, really, I had almost forgotten how much joy I get from working with people. And because of COVID, I offered to work with my publisher in India, because my first book was published in India, in Delhi. And I asked her, you know, how could I help her publishing house? And I offered to run workshops for her. So that was how I got back into it. So I got Zoom, and I was running workshops for bunches of writers in India from my bedroom in Dublin.
Wow.
And it was just the most wonderful experience, because I couldn't travel. I've spent much of my life in India. It's my home in many ways. And so it was just wonderful to be able to be in India for those 2 hours. And it would be at things like 6 o'clock in the morning. So I would spend from 6 to 8 one morning a week for 4 weeks or 6 weeks, chatting with a bunch of people in India about poetry. And we would get people, you know, coming in from the west coast of the United States. We had one woman, we had somebody in France, we had somebody in Scotland, we had somebody in Bray in Dublin. And so we would have this incredible meeting, and we would all be talking about things that really felt important to us. So so some of those workshops, they would be aimed at people who've been writing poetry for a little while, and other workshops which I would run through the Irish Writers' Centre, or Dublin Library sometimes run workshops as well. You can find free workshops there. And I'll be working with the Educational Training Board in Tipperary from September, one day a week. So they're the kind of places that I would do workshops. And depending on who comes into the room, I will gauge the workshop. Sometimes in advance you say to people, well, look, this workshop is for people who've been writing for a while. So we'll be looking at maybe one of the workshops I did was about thinking with nature. Instead of thinking about nature or talking about nature, what is it about nature that can enable us to think and feel and behave differently? So I ran a series of workshops on that. And a lot of the workshops I look at are about using all the words in your head. So I'll be also working in Dunleary Rathdown with the Women for Women program, running workshops in their community starting in September as well, I think. I have to finish arranging that. But yeah, but I have a website, and I put on that where I'm running workshops. And anybody listening who wants to get in touch, just check out the website, and if there's a workshop near you. And if not, you know, I'm always open. If there's a bunch of people who'd like a workshop, to get in touch, and let's see if we can make a workshop happen in a library somewhere near you.
That's a really good point, because sometimes you may not be able to get to the ones that you're doing, but
yeah,
maybe create one. And now, one of the things that I'm intrigued about, especially for people who may not have, I'm thinking specifically for the kind of courses you run in the Irish Writers' Centre, that could be quite expensive.
Yes.
And not obviously you've got to pay the tutor and the facilitator and everything, that's not it. But are there kind of grants and things, scholarship available?
Yeah. So with the Irish Writers' Centre, they do actually have bursaries. So they're called course bursaries. And I think the way they're running them now is you can go to their website, and I'll give you all the details, Mary, and maybe you can put it online. So the website will be irishwriterscentre.ie. So you can go to their website, and if you look up opportunities, and you can apply for a bursary. And so that bursary would give you access to a free course. Right. So you would apply, and then, you know, many people apply. They send in a few poems they've written and a little bit about themselves, and then those applications are processed. But the idea is that people who have started writing but haven't been writing for a long time would be given access to these workshops. So they would allow maybe, I don't know how many bursaries they have per year. It's changed. I think there are more this year than there were last year. So every year it's getting better. And then you're if you're awarded a bursary, you can then choose one of the workshops that you would like to attend. And then that's the price of that is covered for you.
Right, that's really interesting. Yeah. I must get that detail at the end. Because sometimes, you know, like I've had people come and sort of, you know, from working class, from new community, those on CPE schemes, which they only work in 99 is part of employment project.
Yeah.
But there may be writers among them that want to go, they could apply for this bursary.
Yeah, they could apply for that bursary. Yeah. And there's an awful lot of opportunities now. I think it's getting better where they actually say, look, we're actually looking for people from traveller, minority ethnic communities, economically challenged communities. So we're actually looking for people who may not normally be able to access. And so quite a lot of, if you look very carefully, so if you scan this Poetry Ireland website, and they also mention opportunities, there's the Irish Writers' Centre website, they also mention opportunities. So I suppose, and to keep an eye on the Arts Council, because if you've been writing for a little while and you have a few things published, you might even be eligible for an Agility Award.
And what is that award, please?
Well, you can apply for up to €5,000, and you can decide yourself how you would like to spend it. So you can either apply to, you know, pay somebody to mentor you. So you could say, OK, I would like maybe €3,000 for myself to pay me to write, which is what you can do. You can say every week, you know, I'm going to write for so many days a week, and then you pay yourself for whatever number of days a week. You can apply for that. And then you could say, and also I would like to have a mentor, and I'm going to pay my mentor X amount per hour. And so I will have 10 mentoring sessions. So you might have a mentor for like 70 or 100 euros an hour. So you would also factor that in. Or you can use the entire Agility Award just to pay yourself to sit and write. And what they ask you for is proof that you have been writing for a while, proof that you have been published. So that's another thing to think about, trying to get your work into magazines and journals, trying to get it onto websites, you know, try to get your work out there if that's the level that you're at. If you're just starting to write, you know, then it's difficult in the beginning to try and get your work out there. So you just need a little bit more confidence. Maybe you need to start with the beginner's courses and getting, you know, even get a group of friends together and encourage each other. But, you know, how much work you have to send out before something gets accepted. And it's really helpful if you have a bunch of friends who work, who are interested in writing as well, who'll help you with your work.
Thank you. As usual, you brought us more wisdom to understand how we could progress with our writing. Now, you are, we're closely towards the end of the time. Is it possible for you to give us that lovely poem that brought so much into my heart? Old love poems make me
cry.
I didn't want to say the word.
Yeah, this was actually, just from a technical perspective, this started off as a really long poem. And I think, you know, maybe about 20, 30 lines long. And in the end, I just got rid of everything except this. So sometimes you might write pages and pages, and then at the end of it, you end up with, here, this is only 5 lines. Old love poems make me cry. When I read old love poems, 40, 50 years of solid rock and children, fossils embedded in that love, I feel like sand shifting beneath my daughter's feet.
That is just so awesome, because, you know, when people begin to look at old love poems, it revives you so much. But you're saying for those ones, you know, 45, you really see how they lived their life and how they solid. And I like the word fossiled, and you know, oh my God, we've forgotten so many things. Thank you. People did write love poems, and I'm sure they're still writing it. Do you know, but what those love poems now are going to look like in 50 years' time, it will be telling. But thanks for reviving the romance in all of us to go and check out love poems. Now we come very, very close to the end. Before we have your last poem, which again is a good favourite of mine, this, who do you think would benefit best from this particular book? your book, who would you say?
I don't know. I would suggest if you go to the Salmon Poetry website, you can find samples of the poems from the book. And I think if you have a rummage around in those, you might find some poems. Or even if you go to my website, you can find some examples of the poems in the book. And if you like those, maybe you'd like some more of the poems in the book. So that's what I would suggest, you know, like you go into a clothes shop and you try the clothes on first.
Yeah, I think it was lovely to have your launch and the performance and then touch it. So thank you.
And Books Upstairs have copies. So you can always go into Books Upstairs and flick through the pages and, you know, and they're in other bookshops around Ireland as well. And please go into your local library and ask them to buy a copy, because when people go into the library and say, I would like a copy of this book, then the library goes and buys it, which is also good for me. And every time somebody borrows the book, the library pay the writer something. So that's also good. So if you'd like to support me, please go into your local library and ask them to buy the book, and then you can have a read for free.
I think that is absolutely brilliant. We have the last poem. Last but not the least, because get Fiona's book to get more of this wonderful poetry, The Fox and the Girl.
Thank you, Mary. And thanks so much for having me along today. The Fox and the Girl. Our eyes met as we both hid in the undergrowth. He was beautiful. I longed to touch his fur, but held back, knowing. He stared still. A nearby twig crack startled him. I watched as he fled downhill until he disappeared beneath the brow, to reappear at night while I slept. That summer I learned to scheme. I knew he would not come to me if I seemed needy of his presence. I crept around, well hidden, left bits here and there, and waited. Patience was my lesson. I learned it well.
I don't know what I was thinking about, but it could go in so many different ways. It's also very romantic as well. Do you know what I'm saying? Having the fox and following and doing so many things. But you create such images in our heart. And that's why I think, listeners, if you have the opportunity to go to one of Fiona's workshops, I really, really think you'd be blessed. I'm going to try and catch a seat now that I know the ways that you can do it. And Fiona, we've been so privileged to come here. Now, you wanted to give us a website, your website, please?
Oh, my website. So my website is just www.fionabulgerpoetry.com.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's been such a privilege to have you here today. And because you bring to the International Writers Network, many of which are new writers, you know, intermediate writers, and then we have professional writers like you who come and encourage us. So thanks for taking the time. I know you're busy.
Such an honour, Mary. Thank you so much for having me here. And to all your listeners, there's no such thing as a professional writer. I think all of us, every time we start writing something, we don't know how to write it. We're starting from the beginning again. So I think, you know, we're all in this together and we just want to communicate. And I think that's what it's about. And if you can listen to other writers, and just, we want to hear you too. So please keep writing and keep trying.
Thank you so much. That is so encouraging. And the other thing is that after this interview, you're going to hear some samples of those who attended that wonderful launch of her book in the Book Upstairs. And you're going to hear from her mom and a couple of others. So keep on listening. This whole program is about Fiona Bulger, love in the original language. Thank you for coming to our platform today. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Mary. You're so kind. Thank you.
Today, I mean, the Book Upstairs, and Fiona Bulger just launched a beautiful book called Love is the Original Language, and I'm here with one of her attendants. Hold on.
It was a fantastic evening. I thought Lucy Collins' analysis of Fiona's work was really amazing. I learned a lot. It made me think about Fiona's poetry in a completely different way. And I can't wait to get back and read the poems now in the light of what Lucy said about them.
And that was Nadette Foley. I'm just going to try, as you can hear in the background, lots of people here today. Just to see if I can find some other people to say hi to, and Fiona herself. I think Fiona's mum's here, so I'm going to try and get hold of Fiona's mum. Hi, I'm from Community Radio, NFM Community Radio. Just trying to capture, how did you find tonight? Could you just tell me how you found tonight, please?
Yeah, great, yeah. What can I say? It was very entertaining and engaging.
And are you a fan of Fiona?
Yep, I am indeed.
Are you a poet yourself?
Yes, indeed. A friend.
A friend, okay. And do you normally come to launches in the book upstairs?
Well, when I get a chance.
Okay, thank you so much. My name is Mary. I'm just doing some work on the community radio. How did you find tonight? Can you tell me your name, how you found tonight?
I just thought the poems were so moving and so informative and thought-provoking, which I thought was lovely.
Brilliant.
You know, you'll think about them again and... words carried 100 thoughts.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Fascinating. I really enjoyed the readings from both poets. They're really complex, engaging, really moving poems from Fiona Bulger and Anne Tanham. And I also really found myself enthralled by the introduction by Lucy Collins from UCD. I really find it very interesting how she hones in on certain lines in certain poems and really manages to sum up their essence.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. How did you find this? I'm here with Fiona's mother. What a wonderful woman she is. How was tonight for you?
Oh, it was absolutely superb. I just love the way Fiona reads. She's so dramatic. And it's just great to see her getting the respect she deserves.
Well, she's a wonderful writer. Do you write yourself? Do you write yourself?
No, no. Always dreamed, but never got around to it. Mm-hmm. So I am so thrilled. I'm very proud of her. Very proud, Mother.
Thank you so much.
Not at all.
Good to see the mother of the woman. How did you find tonight being a supporting force?
Oh, it was wonderful because it took all the pressure off me. I could just enjoy myself because the night really belonged to Fiona.
And you were brilliant.
Thank you so much. I had such a lovely time and many of the people here are friends of both myself and Fiona, so it felt like a real kind of coming home party.
Hi, this is International Writers Network, and this is the events page. I just want to bring to your attention some things that are going to be happening the next 2 weeks. First of all, it's good news, the writing groups are back. So you can be in touch with writers group, join a local one near you. If there's none in your local library, why don't you, with a few like-minded people, writers who want to write, and go to your librarian, head librarian, and you'd be surprised how much help you get and a free room to start off your writing group. Now, the Ballyferment Writers Group commence in September and they'll be having their meetings on the first Wednesday and third Wednesday of each month, and that would be 6:30 to 7:50. That's the Ballyferment Writers Group. They have a lot of talented people there, and they'll welcome you with open arms. 6:30 to 7:50, but it's only on the first Wednesday and the third Wednesday of every month. So get there. Then we also have the Ballymun Writers Group, of which I'm proud to say I'm a member, and it's facilitated by Nancy Owen, and they meet every Wednesday at 4:30 to 6:30. It's a lovely group, you'll have a fine time. Then we have the wonderful Inkslingers. They're based in the Irish Writers Centre, and they meet every Saturday at 1:30. And the good news with them is that if you can't make it there for whatever reason, they still have the Zoom available. You could contact them through the Irish Writers Centre. Now, the Irish Writers Centre is an umbrella for many writing groups of different types. If you don't find one that meets your need, just call them on this number, +353 1872 1302. So if you want to contact them, find out the groups that are there. If there are no groups available for you, you can actually tell them their need and they'll get like-minded people and form a group. It's a wonderful place to be. Also, they run workshops and many, many seminars. I love September because it's Culture Night. The Culture Night this September is 23rd, and doors are open for many, many things to investigate in Dublin and beyond. Whether you're an artist, a poet, a writer, there are lots of things there for you. Enjoy. So make sure you find out what writing events is happening. I know the Inkslingers will be having a writing event, so why don't you check out from the Irish Writers Centre, or you could drop them a line on at info@irishwriterscentre.ie. That's info@irishwriterscentre.ie to get some more information. But if you like, you don't mind the weather, a brisk walk, you're in city centre, why don't you go to 19 Parnell Square and visit in Dublin 1, and they have a beautiful building. It's a very historic building, so that's the Irish Writers Centre. I'm a great fan and I'm a member. You can become a member too. It's a great place to be, and they welcome all writers from all communities, all background, all genre. Irish Writers Centre is a place to be if you're a writer, to find that information. Now, we have two festivals that are coming up this next 2 weeks. The first one is the International Dublin Writers Festival. Let me say that again. That's the International Dublin Writers Festival. It was started in 2015. The author and the founder is Lawrence O'Brien. I was very privileged to interview him on the North Side today. You can find that interview on Listen Again at the website of Near FM. It starts on the 16th to the 18th of September. And if you want to go the whole weekend, it's only €45. That's just to pay for the rooms. Now, listen, you can't miss it. Check out the interview on the website of Near FM to find out all the wonderful things that's going to be happening there. I'm going to be there the whole of Saturday. You can't drive me away from there. I'm just so excited. You network with people. There's open mic. There's, you know, just so many workshops to give you more information and people who are like-minded and they want you to be there so you can find your own friends and you, we're not going to be the same. I think when writers get together, they do marvelous things. Now, the other one that I've never heard of before, but obviously it is available, is Write by the Sea, and this will take place on the 23rd and to 25th of September in the fishing village of Kilmore, and that's at Co-Wexford. You could get in touch with them at writebythesea.ie. That's writebythesea.ie. And that particular festival is going to take place 23rd to 25th of September. And I'm sure you'll have fun. That's all I've got for you this episode. I'm wishing you a really good time, and we'll meet again very soon. Have a great time.